Hi, I'm Jessica.
And I'm Morgan. You are listening to
Suspicion. Today we are going to be talking about a really wild, crazy, detailed case. So prepare yourselves for the story of Johnny Gosch. Johnny Gosch was born November 12, 1969 in West Des Moines, Iowa. When Johnny got older, he became a very responsible paperboy for his middle-class neighborhood in West Des Moines and would usually wake his father up to help him with his route. But on September 5, 1982, he didn't. He took his wagon and his dog and he set off for his paper route. On this day, Johnny's parents were alerted by neighbors that Johnny had not delivered their newspaper when he usually did. As I mentioned, 12-year-old Johnny was a very punctual paper delivery boy, so Johnny's parents realized something was terribly wrong. John Gosch, Johnny's father, had been searching the neighborhood for Johnny and found his delivery wagon filled with newspapers and their dog left alone a block and a half away from his house.
And immediately he said he knew that something was wrong. The fact that the dog was left alone, that for John Sr. was a big red flag.
As kids who grew up with the dog, no way you ever leave your dog behind.
Especially you.
Yeah.
Because you feel like our dog was your spirit animal, so you would never leave her alone.
No. So something is not right here. John and Noreen Gosch immediately alerted the police. But since there was no note or ransom demand, the police stated that this was not a kidnapping case. I also want to mention here that the police station was about 10 blocks from the Gosch home, and they took 45 minutes to arrive. The police waited 72 hours. That's about 3 days, everyone.
Oh my God.
Before declaring Johnny missing and beginning a search. At first, they considered he was a runaway.
Ugh, I hate that runaway theory. No matter what, if you're a 12-year-old boy, even if you did run away, if your parents report you missing, start the search already. Just start it. And also, what I find interesting is how, because there was no note or ransom demand, that's the reason why the police were like, oh, he ran away.
So one, I was really frustrated when I read this. I want to point out that at this time, it was required to wait 72 hours.
For a kid?
Yes.
In 1982?
This is where I saw in several places.
Wow.
That was like police procedure, was to wait 72 hours.
In case they had wandered off or something, that's what they probably thought.
I guess so. Clearly nowadays we know that that's not the best tactic. Ugh.
So frustrating.
I mean, it was a different time.
I know, but it's still, I guess at this time, you know, our parents say a lot that kids were kind of treated more as adults than they are today. But he's 12. And why would he leave in the middle of his, or at the beginning of his paper route?
I feel like in the 1980s, people were just generally more naive.
Yeah.
There was a lead in the case, though, when private investigators.
I love private investigators. They get stuff done.
And they really help in this case when.
Yeah.
I mean, reporters in this case, too. Investigators, reporters, and the parents.
Mm-hmm.
The police, they are not. They are not the key people in this case. So,
it's okay.
The private investigators found two witnesses who saw Johnny talking to a man in a blue car the morning of his disappearance. Ends up there are actually a total of five witnesses who saw this car around Johnny, stopping multiple times near him. Someone saw a man like coming out of the bushes kind of deal. Near him, but this was not enough information to push the case forward. Specifically, a neighbor named Mike saw Johnny talking to a stocky man in a blue two-toned Ford Fairmont with Nebraska plates.
Okay, so how is that not enough information, though, for the police? Because two-toned Ford car with Nebraska plates, that seems
we don't know how many
specific. True.
How we many don't know Ford? How many two-toned Fords. I bet that was just the look.
It might have been, you're right.
Yeah. Witnesses mentioned specifically that a man stopped and asked Johnny for directions. And Johnny told another paperboy that that man frightened him. He was followed until he was out of sight of the others, then snatched by two men who held him down in the backseat of an old Fairmont. Witnesses saw the car screeching tires as it made a hasty getaway.
While the response of law enforcement was lacking, John and Noreen made sure that Johnny's disappearance made headlines across the country. They went on television, distributed flyers with their son's picture on it. I saw somewhere that they had distributed over 10,000 flyers with his face on it within hours of his disappearance.
I saw that as well.
10,000.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. Johnny's face even made it onto the side of milk cartons, which is something that we talked about in episode 1 with Eitan Pates and how he was the first child to go on a milk carton. And so now this is just bringing it back to another case where this was something used to get the word out.
And we'll mention a little bit more about this later as we talk about more details. I want to discuss the milk carton thing a little bit more.
The Goshes were constantly fighting against the lack of law enforcement involvement. At one point in the beginning of the investigation, the Goshes asked when the FBI would be involved. And the police said the FBI would not be involved because there was no crime to report.
So many times when I was doing research, I added 6 exclamation points.
Ugh, I know.
Bolded, because the lack of police support, investigation, anything is almost far beyond any other case. Like the lack of help this family got is infuriating, and I don't see any actual reasoning for it.
It's not just the fact that they weren't involved at all. It's how they treated the family as well. So at one point, the FBI referred to the Goshes as loons. The police chief was also quoted as saying, and this includes a swear word, which I will say, quote, "I don't give a damn what Noreen Gosh says. I don't give a damn what Noreen Gosh thinks," unquote. That's the mother.
That's the mother of this child who's missing. And she's doing everything she can. So one of the things we watched in preparation for this is the documentary Who Took Johnny, which is excellent. We got a lot of material from that. So definitely check it out. There was a reporter who was interviewed in the documentary, and she said Noreen was a lot. Like when she came into the news station, everyone was like, "Oh no, Noreen again." And she said, "At that time, we were a lot of young, single people. Now, as a mother with children, mm-hmm. what Noreen was doing was advocating for her child." And we'll talk about this more as well, but she got a lot of flack for just advocating for help to find her son, and was not being received kindly at all.
And I believe in the documentary as well, Noreen also kind of talks about this a little bit, where she says, "Yeah, I know I was a lot, but you do anything to find your child."
Mm-hmm.
The police chief was actually eventually proven ineffective and forced to step down but this was all based on issues non-related to Johnny's case. Technically, this case is unsolved. However, there are many theories that have come out to the point where I think a lot of people think that they know what happened. I kind of think I know what happened.
Me too.
And we agree, you and I agree on this, but let's go through the theories and then, of course, you can make up your own mind. Yeah. 2 years later, after Johnny went missing, another paper boy, Eugene Martin, went missing in Iowa. But police were never able to connect the two cases. And eventually, Johnny and Eugene were placed on milk cartons together.
Right. So it's not until Eugene Martin goes missing that Johnny actually makes it down to a milk carton. So they are placed on the milk carton together because people really saw this as linked. I mean, it's two paper boys in Iowa abducted in the morning. And police said that other than being the same gender, these boys had nothing in common. But if you look at pictures of these two boys next to each other, they look exactly alike. And it's not like a crazy kidnapper is basing things off of their upbringing or their personalities. They're looking for people who look a specific way.
You're right, because we're going to be talking about something that's really difficult to hear and also to talk about, which is pedophiles and a pedophile ring, specifically child sex trafficking. And one thing that you see every time you kind of hear stories like this is the fact that perpetrators of these kind of crimes, they go towards victims that look alike.
Right. Even ignoring, say, this wasn't a pedophile ring, because we're talking about theories here again. It's not a closed case. But think about serial killers. They tend to have a quote-unquote type.
Yeah, Ted Bundy had females, long brown hair.
Split down the middle.
Another 2 years after Eugene went missing, another boy, 14-year-old Mark Allen, also goes missing in Iowa. But again, law enforcement never connected these cases. Noreen believes that all three of the boys were abducted for the same child trafficking slash prostitution ring. And I'm inclined to agree with Noreen.
Right. And we'll get into why Noreen and people got this idea of this child trafficking prostitution ring. And I want to just mention right now that if this is something that's a little bit too much for you, which it totally can be, it's super upsetting. This might be a time where you want to maybe skip the rest of this episode. But just a warning that we are going to be talking about child trafficking and child prostitution.
Over the years, several incidents occurred that led Noreen to cling to the hope that her son was still alive. 6 months after Johnny's kidnapping, a woman was approached by a young boy who was screaming, "I'm Johnny Gosch, I've been kidnapped." He was immediately grabbed by two men and never seen again. A dollar bill also surfaced to the Goshes that said, "I am alive, Johnny Gosch."
And Noreen said that the handwriting on this note looked like Johnny's.
Keep in mind, though, that this was a national story and lots of pranks were pulled on Noreen as a poor grieving mother. So who knows how legit these stories are, but that is sickening too, that people would pull pranks on a family that is missing their child.
I was just gonna say the same thing. What kind of sicko do you have to be to, I mean, using the phrase kicking someone while they're down, exactly, is pretty appropriate here, I think. I mean, it's just some sicko who thinks it's funny to add to someone's pain. And that's disgusting.
Take that energy and put it towards trying to find this kid.
Right.
Yeah.
That would be a literally just decent human being.
Exactly.
I'm not even asking you to be a good person. Just be decent. Mm-hmm. So let's get into why people believe this is linked to a child trafficking ring.
And we want to preface this by saying that there were no convictions made for the allegations relating to this sex trafficking ring. And if you want to learn more about it, it's called the Franklin Credit Union. And by itself, this is an insane thing that happened.
Right. When Morgan and I met up this morning to start podcasting, I told her I'm so deep in a hole right now of all of the branches you can go off of this one case and really get into a true crime rut. There's theories. There's a book out about it's called The Franklin Scandal as well. And there's a book out about it. And I was reading that it's really well researched and supports the idea of the Franklin scandal. So I am thinking about reading that book, and we'll also put it on our Facebook, website, all of our social media for you to check out as well if you'd like to read a little bit more about this overarching scandal.
I'll read it after you.
Let's get into the details of how this relates to Johnny Gosch specifically. So in 1989, a man named Paul Benassi provided his attorney, John DeCamp, with information indicating he had participated in the abduction of a Des Moines, Iowa paperboy. And I'm sure you've already guessed, this paperboy was Johnny Gosch. Benassi's testimony provided a great deal of information about Johnny and his case. However, local authorities refused to interview him, questioning his credibility. I'll mention here, Paul had multiple personality disorder. He was, at this point, a convicted sex offender. But Paul also was a victim of this. Believe what you want about the Franklin scandal, but he was a victim of child sex abuse, prostitution, part of a prostitution ring. That he was forced into, of course, at the age of 6. So it's not unheard of for victims of this kind of habitual abuse to then commit crimes.
Especially if his tormentors were the ones forcing him to participate in certain acts.
Which is what he
claims
that he was forced into this. And I'll say right now that I believe a lot of Paul's story.
I agree.
I'll talk about some evidence that supports his claims. But while the police did not interview Paul, Noreen did. So Noreen went and met with Paul Benassi. And he told her things that he could only know from talking with her son. He mentioned that Johnny had a birthmark on his chest, a scar on his tongue, a burn scar on his lower leg. And while a description of his birthmark had been widely circulated, information about his other scars had not been made public. Benassi also described a stammer that Johnny had when he was upset.
I believe Noreen wholeheartedly. I am at the point with this case. So I have researched this case a lot. I've seen Who Took Johnny a few times. This is kind of that case for me that I keep going back to. And the main thing that I've gotten out of this is that I believe in Noreen so much. And so if she is saying that this guy knows things about her son, and I can think that he probably told her more things that he knew about Johnny to convince her a little bit more that he was telling the truth. So I believe Noreen.
I do too. And she believes him. So
we believe Paul.
Right. Paul admitted to chloroforming Johnny and holding him down in the back of the car when Johnny was abducted. He also admitted to being the first man to molest Johnny, which was filmed possibly in order to put Johnny up for sale or possibly just to sell for child pornography.
Ugh.
Paul alleges that Johnny was eventually sold to a man in Colorado.
As hard as this is, I also think that why would Paul admit to molesting someone unless he did do it?
I know.
You know?
Also, in the documentary, Noreen says that at points she was like, I can't hear anymore. I can't listen to anymore. But she had to. She wanted to know what had happened to her son. And if she sat there and can believe that this is what happened to her son, I think that makes it pretty believable.
This is so tough.
I'm sure as a parent, you kind of hope that anything else had happened. Again, the police never interviewed Paul Benassi. Reporters interviewed him. Noreen spoke to him. The police interviewed some of Paul's siblings 10 years after this incident is supposed to have happened.
How would they know anything about it?
I have no idea. I do not understand the thought process there.
That makes no sense.
It makes absolutely no sense. 10 years after Johnny's disappearance, America's Most Wanted did a spotlight on Johnny's case. I'm going to bring up John Walsh, the host of the show, because he will come back later. He's awesome, and he felt passionately about helping missing children's cases because his son, Adam Walsh, was abducted and murdered in 1981 by Otis Toole. And I'm not going to get into this right now, but I think we need to do a follow-up episode on this because
that's another twist and turn.
It's just another connection here that is, I mean, it's super upsetting. It's crazy. This case is just interwoven with a lot of
other cases.
And I think we should tell Adam's story.
Yeah.
America's Most Wanted featured some claims made by Paul, and after the episode, many other children came forward and corroborated Paul's claims. Paul claimed Johnny was branded with a particular brand that another child came forward and showed that he had. Paul also had letters where kids were described being with JG. And he described a house that had a dugout basement where children were kept in secret and was able to actually take reporters to that home. And they found children's initials carved into wood in this dugout pseudo basement.
Ugh, I feel so weak right now.
And when you see Paul at the house.
Oh, no.
He's like not able to. He's almost not able to go in.
Oh, God. This is a really tough case to talk about. But it's important. It's important to know about these things because, like we said at the top, no convictions were ever made based off of Paul's claims regarding this sex trafficking ring. The only case that comes out of it is one on fraud.
Right.
But we'll talk about that in a second.
America's Most Wanted said something along the lines of, if America's Most Wanted with all our resources couldn't solve this case, I thought no one could. And when I looked around, nobody was trying to.
It's disgusting.
I mean, they're America's Most Wanted, Noreen and her private investigators are the only people looking into this.
And the private investigators are paid.
Right.
When you think about it. So they're only invested in this for a paycheck, even though I do like private. As I mentioned, there was only one conviction made based on this child sex trafficking ring and the claims by Paul and other children. A man named Lawrence King, who we're going to refer to as Larry E. King, so as not to confuse with the talk show host. He was the manager of Franklin Community Federal Credit Union, which he ran as a Ponzi scheme to steal money, which he then spent on Republican fundraising. He also sang the national anthem at the Republican National Convention, just for context on how intertwined he was with politics.
Right. Just pointing this out to say he was like knocking elbows with some big-time people in the government.
Apparently, his money fraud was linked to an involvement in a larger child sex ring, and that is the Franklin scandal that we've mentioned. But FBI only pursues embezzlement charges and keeps the child sex ring investigation tight-lipped. Many children come out throughout the years claiming to be abused by Larry E. King and claim that the FBI turned these kids into the criminals, called them liars, and no one would believe their stories. Two kids mentioned in the documentary, Paul and another woman named Alicia, they are actually charged with perjury. And I believe they go to jail for some time. Yep.
I know Alicia went to jail for 4.5 years. So this is another reason why I think it's important to tell this story, is these kids, I mean, at this point, they are older, but these victims or survivors, whatever you want to use as a descriptor, they were not believed. They were pushed down. They were told that they were liars. They were continually shoved aside in what I feel is a widespread cover-up.
Yeah.
And their stories deserve to be told. Their stories are corroborated. Mm-hmm. It's not like there's nothing to give them legitimacy.
Yes, and something that you had mentioned when I came over this morning before we started the podcast is that at this time, people didn't really know what the word pedophile meant, and they were slow to believe that this was possible, that this was something that adults could do to children. Additionally, at this time, the media was debunking the slew of nursery school pedophile scandals all around the country that happened in the 80s, the so-called satanic panic. And because of the stigma that happened after that, people were quick to not believe actual victims.
So we could do, again, a whole nother episode about this, and we might in future weeks. But just to give you a quick summary of what happened here, a bunch of young kids accused nursery school teachers of sexually abusing them in these satanic rituals. It was later found out that these stories were untrue. What wasn't really understood at that time was the idea of leading questions, and a lot of kids were led to these confessions or admittance that they had been molested. So that was debunked, but that doesn't mean that this kind of stuff doesn't actually happen. But there was the confusion at this mm-hmm. time.
It wouldn't be until the Boston Globe does a series on pedophile abuses in the Catholic Church and the Jerry Sandusky case that brought this idea more into the public eye. And if you want to know more on the Boston Globe series on the Catholic Church, check out the movie Spotlight. It is so good, so well done, and
I saw that right after I graduated college with my journalism major, and I was thinking, oh, I'm going to be a journalist like them. And then I became a teacher.
Yeah, and I think that this one, the Catholic Church scandal that the Boston Globe brought to light, it, one, gives credibility to this idea that children are abused mm-hmm. by adults and people in power, but two, shows how much people are able to cover these crimes up.
The secrecy involved.
Mm-hmm. And same thing with then the Jerry Sandusky case later. It shows that people of power are able to cover up crimes.
Yeah. And for more on the Jerry Sandusky case, there's another really good movie called Paterno. And that is based on Joe Paterno, who was the head coach while Jerry Sandusky was his assistant coach. And so it kind of follows that whole, did he know this was happening for many years? Did other people at the school know? So that's really good to watch if you're interested in kind of the secrecy involved around this kind of crime. Anyway, Paul takes civil action on Larry E. King. He finally was believed, and the court ordered Larry E. King to pay him $1 million, which, of course, he never received. Because for some reason, I feel like nobody ever receives the money in a civil court. Nobody gets it.
I mean, I don't understand where the misstep is here. Was Larry E. King's, all of his money taken in this embezzlement thing?
Probably, yeah.
But come on, can't you still pay out from that for his victims? And the judge here said, like, there's no question as to the abuse that Paul
suffered. Finally.
At this man's hands.
So I guess in this case, it's more about the fact that someone in the justice system believed his story, and there was finally action taken against one
even
of his abusers. But
though it's just civil case.
Yeah. Something that comes out that's very interesting is in February of 1999, Noreen Gosh testifies in Paul's civil action case and reveals for the first time to the public, that Johnny came to see her in 1997. He would have been 27 at this time. He talked with her for about an hour. This was at 2:30 in the morning. She says that when she heard the knock on the door, she went downstairs. She opened the door, and she immediately recognized him as Johnny. And then she also says that he opened up his shirt, and there was the birthmark. And this is a big birthmark, too. It's not just like a little spot. This was a big, noticeable birthmark. So she claims that this man came, had the birthmark, and she just, mother instinct, knew this was her son, Johnny. So he came with another man that she had never seen before, and he was telling Noreen about his experience, asking for her help, but also pleading that she doesn't tell anybody about this visit because he's still in danger. And the whole time that he was talking to her, he would look at this man to make sure that what he was saying was okay. And Noreen was happy that she saw her son and that he was still alive, but deeply saddened that all of this had happened to him, and then also the fact that he felt he couldn't stay. He was still in danger. She also mentioned that he told her that him and another boy have escaped this ring. And at this point in time, they were kind of living on the run.
Yeah. And so Paul says something about Johnny's reappearance that Noreen talks about. And he says, you know, Johnny should feel okay to come out. It's not like they're going to convict him on any of the crimes that he possibly committed while he was involved with this child trafficking ring. Because that is something that they use to keep the kids in the ring and to keep them quiet. But Paul was convicted of crimes. Alicia was put into jail for perjury. So I can see why Johnny would not want to come back into the public eye.
I can too.
And Noreen really just wanted to support and protect her son.
Can you imagine spending all of these years wondering where your son is and if he was alive, then to see him and then to have to let him
go?
Oh,
yeah,
Noreen.
She's really strong.
So another thing about Noreen is that she began a personal mission to reveal the truth behind her son's kidnapping and expose an unbelievable politically linked cover-up. Over the years, people often dismiss Noreen as a delusional, grieving mother, but because of her constant battle with law enforcement to find her son, she did make Johnny's case national headlines, and she eventually got Iowa to pass the Johnny Gosch bill, which requires police to investigate missing child cases immediately rather than after 72 hours, which is incredible that she was able to get that passed, but it should have already been a thing.
Right. It's like great, like so amazing that she got it passed, but also why was this not a thing? Like I hope this was easy to pass.
Well, now I feel like every time you hear about, even on, you know, Law and Order and Criminal Minds and stuff, it's like, oh, a child's been missing? We have 24 hours.
Right.
You know? And so the fact that it wasn't even 24 hours or 48 hours, it was 72? Crazy. Noreen and John Gosch, along with John Walsh, the host of America's Most Wanted, and other parents of missing children helped start the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, which you will remember we spotlighted in episode 1. To date, no trace of Johnny Gosch has ever been found. He would be about 44 years old. If you have any information to help this case, because it is still an unsolved case in the eyes of the police department, you can call the West Des Moines Police Department at 515-222-3320. This was a doozy.
Even though, like, you know, I believe Noreen, I believe Paul, I think this is a reasonable explanation of what happened to Johnny. I want the concrete
evidence,
the nitty-gritty details to come out. Nitty-gritty and like he is alive. Like what, you know, mm-hmm. Where
No, I understand what you mean. When people ask me, you know, what case do you want to know what actually happened? Like what unsolved case would you like to have tied up and completed? For me, it's this case. Because even though I can say what I think happened, which I do believe he was kidnapped, I want to know who did it, where did he go?
Who was involved?
Who was involved? How did he get out? Did he get out? Was he murdered? Is he still alive? Is he just hiding? Like, I just really want those loose ends tied up.
Without the direct evidence, there's always that, like,
that what if
in your mind.
Yeah. It's the same with, like, the JonBenet Ramsey case, Madeleine McCann, is that all of these cases, I can believe what I believe happened, but then somebody else, even you, could have a different theory and believe just as strongly about that.
Right. And all of this is theory, conjecture.
Allegedly.
Heavily supported in this situation, but theory.
Which, all of this talk about cases being brought up again and closing brings us to our organization spotlight for the week.
So this week we want to draw your attention to the Cold Case Foundation, which is dedicated to stopping the deadly compounding effect of cold cases and providing hope and resources to families affected by violent crime. The Cold Case Foundation is devoted to raising public awareness and creating partnerships to assist and provide law enforcement whatever resources are needed to bring about closure. You can learn more about them at www.coldcasefoundation.org.
And we will be posting a link to this organization on our website and Facebook page. I'll also update the post on the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, so you can also take a look through that. And we know that this was a very heavy episode, but as usual, we just want to remind everyone that it's okay to get scared, but don't live your life constantly in fear of things that could happen. And just remember to be prepared.
We would love to hear your thoughts on this case. If you have additional pieces of evidence that we maybe didn't include, if you have different theories that we didn't mention here, please connect with us on our Facebook. We are going to be adding a link to our new Instagram and Twitter accounts. So please interact with us and let us know your thoughts on this case. And again, I'd love to recommend Who Took Johnny if you're interested in getting more into the weeds of this.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you.